Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session with Judges Riley, Flory, and Frisch, the Honorable James Flory presiding.
All right, good morning, everyone. The first case on this morning's calendar is In Re the Trust of Elvira Ruth Halverson, court file 820-1186. The matter is here for oral argument. Our normal rules apply, even though we're appearing through a Zoom conference at this time. That means that both sides here will have 15 minutes for their principal arguments, and counsel for appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you wish. We are recording the proceedings as we normally would, and so I would ask that at the beginning of your arguments that you identify yourselves for our record. With that, we'll begin. And counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is John Westrick. I represent the objectors and beneficiaries of the Elvira Ruth Halverson Trust. The question today, that the principal question, is whether or not the trial court erred in approving the trustee's action in selecting an annuity. The trust very clearly provides that a variable annuity is to be purchased with trust funds, and I don't think there's any question that the trustee purchased fixed annuities instead. And I've laid out the standards for the court about what a trustee is and isn't to do, and a trustee, even with a lot of discretion, is not allowed to violate the explicit terms of the trust and thereby do whatever he or she would like to do. And here,
Patrick, it's Judge Riley. I don't see that you're disputing any of the factual findings that the district court made. Is that right?
Yes.
And so it seems to me that you're ignoring the second part of that trust provision, which was to provide a lifetime stream of payment.
Well, I don't believe that we are, because the lifetime stream of payment still could have been done through a variable trust. And if not, the trustee needed to first come to the trial court to say, I need instructions because this you can't do this. What the trustee isn't allowed to do is to decide on his own that we can do this and everything is all okay, and then ask the court to approve it. In other words, you're not supposed to ask for forgiveness, you're supposed to ask for permission. And there have been decisions of the courts that say if the trustee doesn't do that, the trustee doesn't get to rely on something like that and say, oh, well, we could have done it, so it's no harm, no foul. And that's really the problem here, is that the trustee decided on his own what he should do instead of coming in, if there was a conundrum, and said to the court, because only the court can change the trust and allow this. The trustee can't do it. The beneficiaries can't even agree to it. And he should have then come in and said, this is here, and this is the way that I can't do this. And that's part of the problem here. This isn't really something. This is one of these things that the court's either going to agree with me on this, on the legal aspect, or not. And if there's no more questions, I think I've briefed fairly straightforward the issue of the variable and fixed trust. But those are terms that have a specific meaning, and they are terms that, irrespective of how much discretion the trustee had, he was required to do it. Nothing in the second part of that said, oh, if the variable doesn't work, fixed does. It said you are to purchase variable annuities. Flowing from that, then, of course, is the trustee's accounts shouldn't have been approved if there was this error. And of course, the matter isn't moot if there was an error. I'm sorry, my computer.
So Mr. Westrick, is your only claim on the accounting then the claim that you just argued, that the wrong type of annuity was purchased? Or I didn't see where you challenged any other part of the accounting other than that decision by the trustee in the matter.
Well, if the court finds that the trustee violated his fiduciary duty, then his entitlement to compensation when the case goes back down is going to have to be looked at.
And so if we don't find that, is there an issue on the accounting then from your perspective?
that I don't see how there could be.
Okay.
I mean, the reason why the accounting got done was because this court originally dismissed and the appeal we took from the summary judgment granted to the trustee. And when we appealed that, this court said, no, we got to get the accounts all figured first. And so Mr. Bauer sent them in. They were pretty standard. There was nothing nutty in there. And so my clients agreed for purposes of then being able to come up to this court. And then lastly, if there's a violation, this matter is not moot. Even if all the funds of the trust have been spent, a court has the ability to make the trustee personally make the adjustments. They would then have to be hearing on how we make the beneficiaries whole. And then if there's no money in the trust, then the trustee would be personally surcharged. And my clients may or may not have an entitlement to attorney fees for having brought this litigation. Are there any questions? If not, I'll reserve my 5 minutes, but then I'll turn this over to Mr. Bauer. Thank you.
All right, seeing none, Mr. Bauer, you may proceed with respondent's argument.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. Robert Bauer, B-A-U-E-R, on behalf of the trustee, Mr. Haig. I think, Your Honor, Judge Riley, you hit it right on the nose. The clause in the trust is to purchase equal variable annuities to be paid over the lifetime. So my client is the brother of the decedent, the settlor, and he painstakingly looked for annuities that could be paid over the lifetime without this cash option. So there's a lengthy cash out option if he purchased these variable annuities. And so he talked to 15 different advisors as to how to figure out how to buy these. He presented these options to the beneficiaries and we rejected each one. And then finally, he sought the advice of advisors, financial advisors. And then the attorney for beneficiaries, Robert Halverson and Sharon McCarney, wrote to our client through counsel to say,
Hold on 1 second, Mr. Bauer. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure we got the clock going here.
I'm keeping track of manual time. I'm having a problem with the timer.
All right.
Judge, if you want to proceed, I'll keep working on the timer. I'll track the time manually.
Okay, and where are we at manually at?
2 minutes.
2 minutes into the argument? Okay,
yes.
Sounds good, and I'll keep track too. All right, you may proceed, Mr. Bauer. I'll give you a 2 minute warning when you're down to about 2 minutes if we don't get it up on the screen.
All right, thank you. I don't think I'll be meeting all the time, but so counsel for the beneficiaries wrote to the trustee and said, and I quote, they would like to see a fixed term annuity through a provider that is selling their own product. So there is not an optional additional upfront cost. And they'd like to see annuities for Bob and Sharon to be 10 years and the annuities for the children be 20 in the 25 year range. So my client relies on the advice from the lawyers for the beneficiaries and buys the fixed annuities as requested. And then he waited for the cash out option to expire. And then he's asked now to please sign them over because he waited for the cash out period to expire. So now they can't surrender them. They're fixed for their lifetime following the intent of the decedent and the trustee or trustor. And he acted in good faith. And when a trustee acts in good faith, he's got no bad motives here. He's trying to follow his sister's intent to do that. And we look at the divine factors that I quote on page 2 of the brief. There's 6 of them. Discretion conferred upon the trustee. He had broad discretionary powers, the purpose of the trust, and the nature of the power. Again, he's instructed to guide annuities to be paid over their lifetime, which is exactly what he did. He's got no improper motives, and he has no financial interest in it. He wants to turn these over to the beneficiaries. So the court correctly found that he fulfilled his duties. He had no improper motive. He bought the annuities. He fulfilled the settlor's intent to buy annuities that would be paid over the lifetime of the beneficiaries, and they're just refusing to take them. So the district court also found the matter is moot. He bought the annuities. The cash out period has ended. How are they harmed other than they can't cash them out? The annuities are paying out dividends quarterly, just as the trustor, the settlor, intended. He followed the intent, and they just wanted annuities that they could cash out so they could take the money, and that was not what the settlor intended. The intent of the trust is that these annuities will be paid over the lifetime of the beneficiaries. So the matter is moot. The cash out period has expired. He acted in good faith. There's no equitable remedy here. To claim that the trustee has to go and spend his own personal funds to buy annuities that the beneficiaries can go turn around and cash out, that's silly. He followed the intent of what the settlor wanted. His sister wanted these beneficiaries to receive annuities to be paid over their lifetime without the option of trying to cash it out and take the money and run. And that's exactly what my client did. Painstakingly contacted all of these financial advisors to try to figure out how he could purchase this product, and then works with counsel for two of the beneficiaries to find a product that they find acceptable. He's acting completely in good faith. There's nothing he did wrong. And we petitioned the court because the beneficiaries wouldn't sign the paperwork to get the annuities transferred to them. All he's trying to do is fulfill his job as trustee and to get these annuities transferred to the beneficiaries so that they can start receiving the quarterly income that is being paid. They haven't shown how they've been harmed. How they've been harmed just because they can't cash them out. They're still an annuity. They're still paying over their lifetimes. There's been no harm here. And that's why there's no equitable remedy that exists for the trial court. Trial court found that the trustee acted in good faith, and therefore the trial court did not abuse its discretion in denying equitable relief here. And so we believe, again, the trustee acted in good faith, and the trial court correctly found that he followed the intent of the settlor, of the trustor, and purchased annuities to be paid over the lifetime of the beneficiaries. And again, on the accounting, as counsel acknowledged, there's been no finding of bad faith or that the account was improper. It's accounted to the penny for every nickel that was in the trust account that my client administered. And the district court correctly approved the trustee's final account, compensation for the trustee, attorney's fees compensation. All that remains is to compel the beneficiaries to sign the paperwork, to have the trustee distribute these annuities that were purchased now that the cash out period is no longer a viable option. So I have nothing further unless there are any questions. Thank you, Your Honors.
Seeing none from the panel, Mr. Bauer, thank you. You'll have 5 minutes of rebuttal, Mr. Westrick. I see it, the clock is up and you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just a couple of items to respond. The issue of harm was not litigated. It was not before the district court. The issue before the district court was whether or not the purchase of the fixed annuities was appropriate or not. So we never got to that.
Is that a legal or a factual issue then, Mr. Westrick, from your perspective?
It's a mixed question of law and fact. What happened is a finding of fact. Whether or not it meets what the trust required, I believe, is a legal issue.
So what is the genuine issue of material fact that would defeat summary judgment then?
Well, the genuine issue is we believed we were entitled to summary judgment on the grounds of whether or not the trustee followed his instructions. When we go to the second part of Article 2, that is a general intent. When we go to the first part of Article 2, telling what type of trust was to be purchased. That is a specific instruction, the specific controls over the general. And so this the grantor said buy variable annuities, and the trustee did not. The courts have been clear. The O'Shaughnessy court made it very clear, our Supreme Court, that even when a trustee has absolute or unlimited or uncontrolled discretion, they may not violate the trust.
Do you agree with Mr. Bauer's statement that the record supports that at least a couple of your clients agreed to the purchase of the fixed annuities and have now changed their mind?
Yes, a couple of them did, but some of the others. I was not the attorney, incidentally, below sending that letter, just so the court knows. But that doesn't matter. And the reason why that doesn't matter is our Supreme Court in Warner's Trust and this court in the Foley Trust case, and the statute says beneficiaries may not consent to deviations from the trust. And you have to go to a court. If the court doesn't do it, it's not done. And so it doesn't matter what they said, even though I will acknowledge it's kind of, it makes this a little nutty, but that was not me, and that was not all of the beneficiaries, and it doesn't matter, because if the beneficiaries and the trustee had entered into some agreement, it would not be enforceable. You'd have to go to the court first. And then I just want to point out, the law recognizes an equitable chosen action of a beneficiary to enforce the trust terms. So there is a cause of action here if the terms of the trust have been violated. And the terms of the trust have been violated. What the trustee should have done, if faced with this conundrum, was petition the court before buying the annuities, not after. Again, this is not to beg forgiveness rather than ask permission. They should have asked permission, and having not done so, he doesn't get the benefit of the statute. No one has argued that the trustee acted in, quote, bad faith. It doesn't matter. This court has said, and the Supreme Court has said, that if a trustee violates the terms of the trust, even in good faith, it's a violation. And as a result, we have a violation here, because the specific says by variable and the general says it has to be uncashable. And if there was this conflict again, they should have gone to the court. And the matter is not moot, because the district court can order the trustee personally to whatever harm is there to ameliorate it. I don't know what that is yet, and that hasn't been determined, because all we determined below was whether or not the trustee's actions followed the trust. Are there any questions? Seeing none, my client thanks the court for its time and attention to the matter.
All right. Thank you, counsel, for your briefing and argument in the matter. The court will take the matter under advisement and will issue a decision within 90 days. We stand adjourned.
Thank you.